Welcome. This is the Life Habits Podcast Series. My name is Carl Vredenberg.
And my name is Paige Herron.
This is the series that helps you to learn new habits to optimize your life and embrace an enlightened, healthy, and prosperous lifestyle.
This is episode 124, and today we will be talking with Dr. Robin Hills about emotional intelligence. Welcome to the Life Habits Podcast, Robin. This is episode 126, and today will be our second half of our conversation with Dr. Robin Hills, discussing emotional intelligence. Welcome back to the Life Habits Podcast, Robin.
Oh, I'm delighted to be a guest on your podcast. Thank you for having me.
We are delighted to have you. Dr. Robin Hills is a business psychologist and director of EI for Change, a company specializing in emotional intelligence for educational training, coaching, and personal development, with a focus on emotional intelligence, positive psychology, and neuroscience. Recognized with the International Impact Company of the Year Award by .com magazine in 2024, Robin has taught over 400,000 individuals across more than 195 countries. He is also an accomplished author and keynote speaker, receiving accolades such as Best Transformative Emotional Intelligence Coach of the Year 2024 by CIO Times and Men Leaders to Look Up To by Passion Vista magazine. In early 2024, Robin was presented with an honorary doctorate in advanced studies in psychology for his contributions to emotional intelligence training. In case you missed last week's episode, we delved into an insightful conversation with Robin about the significance of emotional intelligence in the workplace. Robin explained the distinction between EQ, or emotional quotient, and IQ, intelligence quotient. Unlike IQ, which tends to remain fixed after a certain age, EQ can be cultivated and developed throughout our lives. Robin underscored the vital role that emotional intelligent leaders play in fostering positive and productive work environments, emphasizing the importance of steering clear of toxic behaviors such as anger and fear. He stressed the significance of managing emotions effectively, advocating for expressions of disappointment over anger, which can be more readily received and understood. Robin also highlighted how mindfulness, self-awareness, and choosing constructive emotional responses are essential practices for cultivating emotional intelligence in the workplace. Here is a clip from last week's episode to refresh your memory on the important quotes Robin shared with us, along with his definition of emotional intelligence.
The first quote I would like to give you comes from Daniel Goldman, who brought emotional intelligence into the public consciousness 30-odd years ago in the 1990s. And within his books, he is purported to have said, "There is intelligence in emotions, and intelligence can be brought to emotion." And I really like that quote because it really sums up what it is that we can do with our emotions. And if we apply our intelligence, we can become more emotionally intelligent. One of the other quotes that I brought along is from 2,500 years ago, and this is by Aristotle. "Anyone can become angry, but that's easy. But to be angry with the right person to the right degree at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that's not easy, as it's not in everyone's power." And the final quote I brought along comes from Stephen Covey. "Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply."
It'd be great to start with sort of a definition of what emotional intelligence actually is.
The simple definition of emotional intelligence that I work with is emotional intelligence is being smart with your feelings. But it's being smart with your feelings in order to make good, authentic decisions and build up quality relationships with the intent of action. Now, that's very, very simple for me to say, but to put into practice, it is incredibly hard because We are emotional beings as human beings, and emotions drive our action and emotions drive our behavior. How can we apply these principles of emotional intelligence to everything that we do?
With those insightful quotes fresh in our minds, let's pick up where we left off last week and discuss using emotional intelligence outside of the work environment. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about how we can benefit from strong emotional intelligence in our personal lives. How can emotional intelligence optimize our overall mental health and well-being?
I think in terms of working with emotional intelligence, it's if you can become more aware of your emotions and what it is that is helping you to build your pleasant emotions and working with your emotions, be they pleasant or unpleasant, but working with them constructively, will help you overall in terms of this feeling of well-being and in terms of little bursts of happiness. The interesting thing about emotional intelligence in the home environment is, yes, I work very, very well within the work environment with emotional intelligence. At home, it doesn't work the same way. And my relationships are very, very strong within my family. I've been married for 40 years. That doesn't mean to say that we do not have intense discussions, arguments, and we have relationship issues from time to time when things just don't go the way that we want them to. Now, when that happens, my wife has a wonderful way of dealing with it by pointing out the fact that I'm not being emotionally intelligent. More often than not, she's right. But there are going to be times when I just don't want to be emotionally intelligent. So I have two daughters who are in their mid-30s. They are wonderful women, and they've grown up, and they've developed lives of their own. And there are times when I look back as being a father with them, and I recognize points where I could have been a better father to them. And I've done things which perhaps I'm not quite so proud about, but I did them. It hasn't been detrimental to our relationship. So I think in terms of me working with it and managing it, it's just to accept, yeah, it's always another way. What I did is what I did. I could have done it better. Often there are times when I will talk to my daughters about something that I've done and I say, well, I wish I'd done it differently. And they say, Dad, what are you talking about? I can't even remember. So we've just got to recognize that, going back to the points that we've talked about in terms of being mindfulness and about choices, there are going to be times when we have a range of choices open to us. Some of the choices we might not like. We might not like any of the choices. And what we've got to try and do is to choose the less bad choice. Sometimes we don't get that right. So it's a case of not berating ourselves for things that we have done. If there's something that we've done which is terribly bad, let's try and correct it if it's at all possible. But I can't do anything about things that I've done in the past, apart from apologizing for them. What I can do is what's in the present moment. And what I can do is in the future that is ahead of me. And I can work to construct that in a way that will build upon me, my relationships, and make it better. So I don't want to go right down the rabbit hole of looking at mental health, because again, that's a whole podcast in itself around emotional intelligence. But working on your emotional intelligence, very, very simplistically, working on your emotional intelligence will help with your overall mental health and your overall well-being. Just recognize that emotional intelligence will help.
So is it fair to say that when it comes to our relationships and our personal lives, that using the things that you've spoken about before with mindfulness, being present in the moment, active listening, that self-awareness piece is what is going to improve upon those relationships or make them worse?
Yes. Let me go back to the quote that I brought in from Stephen Covey. And this really does resonate within the family environment and within our social relationships with friends. Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen to the intent to reply. Now, when we're out at that restaurant with a friend, talking about our childhood relationships and the way in which we've grown up together and share memories, we're in conversation with each other and we will be talking to each other and we'll be having a conversation. Let's forget about emotional intelligence there. Be in the moment, enjoy the relationship, enjoy the fun of it. You're not listening with the intent to understand. You don't need to understand. You just need to listen with the intent to reply. If you're dealing with somebody within the family who has got a problem and they come along and talk to you, that's harder. But it's very, very hard, and it's compounded by the relationship within the family. Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They think they know what the issue is. They think they know what the other person needs. They're waiting for the opportunity to tell the person what it is that they think that they need. And they will get it wrong. And because they get it wrong, the relationship doesn't quite go the way in which the other person wants it to, and conflict will ensue.
What are your thoughts on, and this might be similar to what you were just describing, but I wanted to see it in a broader context. So thinking about if many more people develop their emotional intelligence, what would it look like for creating a stronger community? I know that we're often saying, well, there's a whole other podcast on this topic because of many of these we go deeper, but I always reflect on, you know, the challenges we have in the world right now. And then think about if everybody took a more mindful, self-aware, reflective, emotionally intelligent approach to dealing with one another, the world would be a better place. But what are your thoughts on that more generally, in addition to the individual perspective?
Well, I think what we've got to do is to go back to the question as to what it is that is causing us emotional turmoil around the world today. There is not a lot that I can do in certain hotspots in the world. They are not in my location. It's beyond the way in which I can work and influence. I don't like what I'm hearing, what I'm reading. What is it that I can do about it? Well, what I can do about it is to go back to what Stephen Covey described as being selfish. I can look after myself in order that I can give better to the people that I am working with. I'm very optimistic around the future, but I think what we've got to do is just to be a little bit more caring, a little bit more sharing, and we've just got to listen harder. Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. Let's see if we can start understanding each other. What is it that I can do to understand the people around me? Now, I've got a two-year-old grandson. It breaks my heart to read some of the news stories around two-year-olds around the world who are being abused mentally, physically, within their family units, or indeed because of war. There is nothing I can do about it. If I want to do something deliberate about it, then I go into politics to change the world. That's not what I'm here to do. In terms of my two-year-old grandson, what I need to do is create the right environment for him to grow and learn and to build him up into a man who can make a difference in the world. That is my focus, and I would encourage everybody to look at their family, be thankful for what they've got, and to look at building up their relationships to be the best that they can be. Because that's what you can control. That's where you can make a difference. That's where you can understand. And collectively, where I think we can make a difference by building it all together.
So what I hear you saying is empathy. We need to develop that empathetic side to us so that we're not listening as the quote says, to reply, but we're listening to understand, and that's going to improve collectively the world. It's going to improve our relationships. Can you give us some examples of habits we can practice daily to strengthen that empathy muscle?
Yes, and before I do that, I would like to really highlight this word empathy, because it's a word that is often bandied around and everybody thinks they know what empathy is. Empathy is not sympathy. It's not having sympathy for another person, because if I am sympathetic towards another person, it puts me into a position of superiority. And usually what I am doing through my sympathy is making myself feel better. No, empathy is more about seeing the world from the other person's perspective. It's understanding their thinking and it's understanding their feelings. So what I do say to people when I'm talking about empathy is, I don't have to agree with you. I just have to understand. Now, that's the hard bit. Trying to understand why somebody has some really obnoxious ways of thinking in my book, but try and understand where that comes from and what it is that they get from that way of thinking and why it makes them feel the way they do, is part of being empathetic. So what can we do in terms of being more empathetic? Learn to listen. Learn to listen at a deeper level. Learn to go beyond the words that are being used and learn to try and understand what the person is talking about when they're talking to us. Let me give you an example straight off the top of my head. I haven't, but if I was to go along to a friend and say to them, I've just bought a new car, it's a red Tesla. My desire there through that conversation is to talk about my new car. My friend might pick up on the word red and start saying, oh, I don't like red. It's a horrible color. It's all about anger, isn't it? Or they might then pick up on the word Tesla and say, oh, I don't like Teslas. I don't like Elon Musk. And the conversation will then get drawn down in a different direction. Or they might talk about the electric engine versus the combustible engine. So what they're doing is they're denying my desire to take the conversation around my new car off onto a tangent around what it is that they want to talk about. So I would be suggesting to people is, when somebody is telling you something, it's not a case of listening just to the words and the meaning around the word. It's, why is the person telling me this? What is it that they want me to hear? What is it that they want to talk about? That will help us to be a lot more empathetic.
Now, in that example, what is a question maybe you could ask that person to gauge what it is they want to talk about? Is there something you could ask?
Not really. I think the important thing there is, again, I'm talking about when you're having a conversation with somebody, a very, very general, light conversation. But when you're actually having a conversation with a friend and a friend is talking to you about something, their new car, the color of their new car, the type of new car that they're talking about, recognize that's what they want to talk about. They don't want the conversation to go off at a complete tangent. Does go off at a complete tangent, at some point they'll bring it back to their new car because that's what they want to talk about. So when you're in conversation with somebody, what is it that this person is wanting to talk about? Where is the conversation going? And conversations will often wax and wane and they'll flow according to the emotional climate of the interaction. But just really question, am I giving my friend what it is that they need? Am I listening? Am I listening so that we can go in the direction that they want to take the conversation? And then there are going to be times when I want to be more selfish, not the Stephen Covey definition of the word. No, this is what I want to talk about now. So let's have a conversation around what I want to talk about. But recognize when that happens and just enjoy it. If you've got a friend there, they're going to be very, very supportive and happy to go with you.
So if they're wanting to develop their emotional intelligence more strongly. I've made the suggestion on previous episodes as well, as to practice in the next interactions that you have with a friend, let's say, and you're going to deeply, deeply listen. You're going to listen authentically. You're not going to say anything. And you're not going to have your own personal perspective on it. You're not going to come back, well, yeah, I did this as well. No. Just think about, you know, what they're saying, really starting to really delve into and further develop the ideas that they're expressing and stuff like that. I think you've hit on a really fundamental difference. And it's a Stephen Covey. We both love Stephen Covey stuff. And I think it really is at the heart of his work, is to really deeply see that other person, value what they're saying for themselves rather than just in relation to you, right? Really being more other person-centered is maybe another way to put it. Is that the way to think about it?
Yes, that's right. Look, if Stephen Covey had written his books in the last 30 years, it would be infused with emotional intelligence, because basically that's what Stephen Covey's book is. It's a Bible to me, because it, quite honestly, that is the Bible of emotional intelligence.
So we've heard you say that using emotional intelligence in the workplace versus our personal lives is very different. But what are some habits that we can practice for navigating stressful scenarios or conflicts in our personal lives to have effective communication and strengthen those relationships rather than diminishing them?
Let me go back to what we talked about in terms of emotional regulation within the workplace. And I challenged everybody really to go away and think about their hot buttons, what makes them angry, what offends them. So that gives them more insights in terms of taking the time that they need before responding. In our social relationships, in our relationships at home, who knows your hot buttons very, very well? Your partner. Who knows your hot buttons better than you do? Your sibling. They know how and when to press them. And they will press them whenever it suits them. And I think it's important that to, first of all, recognize that's what they're doing. And more often than not, they're doing it in a playful way. Yes, they're doing it in a spiteful way, but they're doing it because they can. And they're also doing it because you're allowing them to do it. So I think in those sort of circumstances, just recognize that within the home environment, you're going to have your hot buttons pressed a lot more easily and a lot more readily than you would at work. And I think this is what makes the practice of emotional intelligence so much more challenging at home than it is at work. Now, I'm not saying that we put on masks at work, but at times we do behave more civilly within the work environment than perhaps we would do at home. Again, a very, very, very silly example, but it illustrates exactly what we're talking about. At home, everything's neat and tidy. At work, the desk might look a right mess. At work, you might know where everything is on that desk, but you don't want to keep it as tidy as you do at home. Or it might be vice versa. At home, everything might be a complete mess and you live like a real slob, yet at home, everything is all laid out neat and tidy. We'll just do things differently. We just want to perhaps be perceived as more professional, in inverted commas, whatever we perceive that to be.
I love the advice that you've given throughout this whole podcast, Robin. And I wanted to just dig in that spirit of trying to give really practical advice, thinking about the relationship between emotional intelligence and self-care practices, things like mindfulness and meditation and the like. What techniques can people build into, like very practically, into their day-to-day personal habits to really develop emotional intelligence more strongly? But in particular, what kinds of things can they do kind of day to day to be more effective in this area?
Some very, very simple examples that I can give you. And often when I'm running a mindful workshop within training courses, people will say to me, I don't have time for mindfulness. I don't have time. I haven't got 10 minutes to go away and meditate and things like that. Okay, so you're not going to sit down in a darkened room and meditate and concentrate on your inner thoughts or concentrate on your breathing. But let's have a look at some opportunities throughout the day when you can practice mindfulness. A couple of examples that I give people. You clean your teeth in the morning and at night. Right, there's 2 minutes where you can practice mindfulness. As you're driving to work, all the traffic lights are not going to be on green. You're going to stop at a traffic light every so often. When that happens, don't look in the mirror and pat your hair. Don't change the radio onto another channel. Just sit and focus on your breathing for 5-10 seconds, however long the traffic lights will give you to change. You're standing in the queue waiting to get a cup of coffee. There's an opportunity to practice mindfulness. Don't get your phone out and check your emails. This is your opportunity to just reflect and practice on your breathing. So these are some moments in the day where you can snatch moments of mindfulness and just enjoy them when they arise. When you get into bed at night and you snuggle down underneath the sheets, what is it that you're grateful for? Grateful for being in a warm bed, that you've got a full belly, that the day's gone well, you've survived. What is it that's gone well? 3 good things that have happened to you that day. Not the bad things. 3 good things that have happened to you that day. And that helps in terms of building this well-being, this gratitude. And it helps in terms of building your mindfulness habits and emotional intelligence.
So really staying in the moment, being mindful of the little things. I've heard a lot of talk about being mindful when you eat. So paying attention, being in the present moment. So that just about wraps up our questions for you. But is there anything that we haven't covered or we haven't asked you that you would like to share with us?
There is one thing that I would like to bring to everybody's attention, and that's to be mindful of some of the words that we use. And a phrase that I often get here bandied about, you will probably use this phrase without even thinking about it, and that's work-life balance. And this is a phrase which, when you think about it, is completely misleading, doesn't help with emotional intelligence, and doesn't help with mindfulness. And doesn't really help with people understanding how work fits into their life, because life is not at one end of a fulcrum with work at the other. The way in which we are working because of the phase that we're in our life is that we're actually integrating work into our life in an appropriate way. Here I am on Sunday afternoon at tea time sitting and talking to you. No, that's my life. No, it's not. This is work. This is fun. I'm enjoying this. This is part of me being at work. And then there are going to be times during the working week when I have to go to the dentist, I have to go to the optician, I go to get my hair cut, I go to the audiology clinic. I have to take a day off because I'm sick. I have to take a day off because a member of my family's sick and I need to care for them. So I think what we've got to do is not to look at work-life balance. We've got to look at integrating work into life and utilize that expression, because that actually helps us to come to terms with work far better than considering work-life balance.
Robin, I love that. And there's a previous episode of this podcast that talked specifically about that and in using the exact phrase you came up with. We're coming from the same place. I just love what you said there. So before we finish up, could you please let the listener know where they can go to find out more about you and your company, EI4Change? Can you also talk a little bit about the free resources your company provides along with the online courses that you offer? And finally, where can we get copies of your books?
So let's go in reverse order. My books are available on Amazon. I've written two books, The Authority Guide to Emotional Resilience in Business and The Authority Guide to Behavior in Business. Both of these books are available on Amazon. I know they're unavailable on Amazon.com as well as .co.uk. So go and look out for my books there. I have a free book, Develop Your Emotional Intelligence, which I will tell you how you can get hold of that in a minute. I also have a free course working with mindfulness, which I have made available to your listeners. And again, I'll tell you exactly where you can go to get enrolled on that course. You can find me at my website, ei4change.com. That's ei4change.com. And if you go to the website, a little pop-up will come after about 30 seconds. Sign up for the free book. Please sign up for the free book, and that will give you access to Develop Your Emotional Intelligence. If you're on the homepage of the website, there is a link there that you can click to take you to the free course. If you want to go to my courses, courses.eiforchange.info/collection, and that will give you access to a whole range of my courses. What I will do, Paige, Carol, I will send you the links so that people can directly sign up for the book or for the free course without having to go through the EI for Change website. And the other way that people can connect with me very easily and very readily is through either Facebook, but more specifically, the business networking platform, which is LinkedIn. Please come and find me. I'm more than happy to connect with anybody. Paige, Carol, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for chatting with us today. And we will link to all of those resources and how to connect with you in the show notes. I myself have signed up for that free ebook. I read it, loved it. So I encourage you listening to do the same.
Paige, and I just really want to thank you, Robin, for talking with us today, providing such insightful advice. And we appreciate you. So, Paige, could you please share how they can get in contact with us?
Visit our website, lifehabitspodcast.com, to sign up for our newsletter, get in touch with us, find our social media pages, and learn how you can support this podcast. Contributions allow us to bring you a new episode every week of the series that helps you to learn new habits to optimize your life and embrace an enlightened, healthy, and prosperous lifestyle. If you love our podcast, please give us a rating in the app you're listening to us on, follow us, and share us with your friends.
And with that, Paige and I would like to thank you for listening to our podcast. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next time, and bye for now.